But I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate. We think too much and feel too little. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness. Without these qualities, life will be violent.
And welcome to the Corporation Nation. It is Monday, June 1st, 2015. This is Deanna Spingola, and I am subbing for the one and only Clint Richardson tonight. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. He is the producer of The Corporation Nation, a wonderful, wonderful film, and Lethal Injection, The Story of Vaccination, and Kaffir School, School Districts, and The Lottery. His most recent movie is Common Core, Agenda 21, and Global Privatization, which was published on December 22nd, 2013. Anyway, during the program, email your questions or comments to comment@spingola.com. We have two chat rooms open tonight, corporationnation.chatango.com and spingola.chatango.com. We may take calls later on in the program at 800-313-9334. Is that right? Yeah. Is it, what? Yeah, I thought that sounded kind of funny. 9443, sorry. Sorry about that. I thought that sounded a little, well, like an error. Our guest tonight is Mark R. Elsis. E-L-S-I-S. His, well, he's got lots of websites, but the one that we're going to talk about tonight is AmericanExceptionalism.net. And he talks about the 50 ways the American dream has become a nightmare. Mark, are you with us?
I am with us. Hello.
Hi.
Good
how are you?
Good day, Deanna, and thank you, Clint, and thank you, Deanna, for having me back on for our 14th chat.
Great. Well, I always love talking with you. You're so interesting, and you've done so many things, so many websites, and covered so many topics in such a comprehensive way that it's always delightful to talk with you.
Yeah, I've been listening in on your shows and Clint's shows, and Clint does just excellent work. He really does.
Oh,
and,
he's fabulous.
It's superlative, and I don't really give out too many kudos, but it's just very different and real interesting a lot, and I've learned a lot. And so, and from you, of course, it's you've been nonstop doing just unbelievable work yourself. So, you know, so there goes the Mutual Admiration Society, but. I'm going to be talking about American exceptionalism, and it's a rather long piece. It's almost 50 pages, and I'm going to start from number 50. There's 50 different sections, and I'm going to work back up to one. But before that, I'd like to just convey a little story that happened to me about 30 years ago, and I'm going to call it Stop Pre. And it's about a middle distance runner called Steve Prefontaine, who 40 years ago on May 30th died in a car accident. But to begin, it's sort of, I wrote a little just a little one page thing out, so I'll read it. I have had an unbelievable Forrest Gumpish type life, meaning that I've had many meetings, mostly by chance, with influential people, and I've had an extraordinary amount of what most people call coincidence. Many times in my life, I've also known what was going to happen in the future. such as telling my best friends 3 weeks before John Lennon's assassination that he would very soon be assassinated, and that they would blame it on a lone deranged crazy fan, and that this deranged fan would never go to trial. This is, of course, what happened. I don't believe in what people call coincidence. In short, I believe that if you resonate at the right frequency, you tap into what Dr. Rupert Sheldrake calls morphic resonance, or the morphic field. And how did I know John's impending assassination? Well, because since I first saw the Beatles on John and the Beatles on Ed Sullivan in February 64, when I was just turned 6 years old, and especially when I listened to the first ever satellite simulcast, which was June 1967, when John and the Beatles sang "All You Need Is Love" to the whole world for the first time. And so by that time, I was already 10 years old, and I knew that I was born into an insane asylum, and that John's words of love and his music resonated with me unlike anything else. So it's a sort of a tapping into what you resonate with. And I still don't know how I knew he was going to be assassinated. It wasn't any deductive reasoning or anything. And that's the best way I can explain that, and to sort of set up this little story about Prey. I attended LaSalle High School in what used to be known as the Bowery section of Manhattan, where all the bums hung out. And it was located on 2nd Avenue and 2nd Street. LaSalle is the oldest Catholic high school in the United States. While I went there, I ran varsity track, and my idol, and I don't really like saying that word, but he was Steve Prefontaine. Pre, as he was known, was the greatest collegiate runner while at the University of Oregon at Eugene, and he was also the greatest American middle distance runner in the early and mid-70s. At one point, he held 7 American records, from the 2,000 meters all the way up to the 10,000 meters. Pre died on May 30th, 1975, 4 days before I graduated from LaSalle. Now, you fast forward about 10 years, and it was around 1985. I was driving, I was going to university, and after, I drove a taxi at night in Manhattan. One night, I picked up 2 guys on 1st Avenue and 1st Street, just down the block from LaSalle. They told me that they were going to 51st Street and 1st Avenue. While I was driving them, I blurted out, "You 2 guys are from Oregon." They did not mention anything about Oregon, nor did they have an accent that gave them away. They were astonished, saying, "Yes, they were both from Oregon." They asked me, "How did you know?" Then they proceeded to tell me more about them and where they were from and everything. I said, it doesn't happen to me to work like that for me. I just said that it just comes to me. They soon went back to talking. And about a minute or so later, I blurted out, "Eugene." These 2 guys were now more astonished, and because they admitted that, yes, they were both from Eugene, Oregon. Once again, they repeatedly asked me to tell them something else. Again, I told them, "It doesn't work like that for me. Somehow I just know, and I say it." Finally, after a couple of minutes, they both calmed down. And just as I was about to let them off at 51st Street and 1st Avenue, I once again blurted something out. This time I said, "Stop, pray." One of the 2 guys went crazy, and he started to scream, saying, "Do you know what you just said?" I said, "Yeah, stop, pray, Steve Prefontaine." This guy started screaming over and over again that Steve Prefontaine was my best friend. Steve Prefontaine was my best friend.
Wow.
He was literally so shaken up that he was in tears when he finally left my taxi.
Holy cow.
It's just, yeah, I've had many stories like this in my life, but this one, because of Pre's, you know, just his 40th anniversary of his death, and it's interesting because I was also, when I was very young, a great basketball player, and my idol in basketball was this player called Pistol Pete Maravich, and this is sort of going off on topic, but he also died young. He died at 40 years old in a pickup game, and here's this other idol, and while I was running, and Steve Prefontaine, he was just he was more than a runner. It was a lot of other things about him, but he was just amazing motivation and he, I think he would have won the 5,000 meters in the 1976 Montreal Olympic Games, and it was just a horrible ending. But his running spirit stayed with me, and I still run to this day. And I mean, as a matter of fact, in 1991, while I was still living in New York City, I ran more races. I was a member of the New York Road Runners Club, and ran more races that year than anybody else in the club. I think there was like 30,000 people in the club. I also ran the marathon that.
Wow.
And blah blah blah. So, but that's my little story about Steve Prefontaine, and thank you for letting me sort of say that, because these certain people in your life that sort of really motivate you in certain ways, and I've always found solace and I love to run. So it's just it's sort of, and I've always, when people did that to me, whether they be, you know, like John F. Kennedy or Bobby Kennedy or whatever, or John Lennon, I try to always acknowledge them in their life and their anniversaries of their death. And so, anyway, and so American exceptionalism.
Yes.
It's something that I was compiling for a long time, and I finally wrote it, I think, early last August, and of course it went from being a little piece to 50 pages, but you know how that is. So it's, and I compiled it because in a nutshell, we have this illusion that it's still like, I don't know, 1954, and we're the best at everything in this country. Not that we were back then even, but in a lot of other things, in many things we were so much better than we are now. But this perception has been crafted very very professionally to make a lot of people believe it, even against what is staring them in the face. And so I compiled these 50 different ways that we're not the best at it, but we are literally either the world's worst or the industrial worst in the industrial countries, or one of the worst in the world. And so it actually, when I was doing the research for it, a lot of these things, you know, it was like, wow, it even woke me up in many ways. I couldn't believe the depth of where we sank as a country. And so number 50, as I said, I'm going to go from the last one and work my way up, hopefully, to number one. Number 50 is something you've discussed with a lot with James Perloff, and he does a magnificent job. And I listened to the last one on Lusitania. It was just excellent. And number 50 is, we are number one in the creating of false flag events. And over the last 116 years, the United States has been number one in creating false flag events to start wars, which have killed well over 100 million people.
Yeah,
I must say, yeah, I mean, it, you know, yeah, we say that sort of just going out and I think of you a lot when I think of these numbers, because, you know, sometimes you tend to get emotional, and I think it's really good, because, you know, sometimes we say it like, oh, 100 million people died. It's like, it's staggeringly, is that a new word?
It might be.
Yeah, there you go. We'll put that in the dictionary, the urban dictionary. But it's well over 100 million people because of pretty much Jewish influence that has created these false flags ever since, you know, I mean, I go back to 1898 in the USS Maine or Lusitania or Pearl Harbor or the Gulf of Tonkin or the 312 babies slaughtered in your incubators or the weapons of mass destruction, you name it, or the, you know, the chemical warfare, the chemical agents that Assad is supposedly used on his people. I mean, it's these, and every one has, of course, been shown to be what it is, or 9/11, excuse me, I forgot the biggest one, which I worked on for 2 years of my life. They're all the same. And, you know, people are beginning to catch on more and more to this, I see, and that because they're becoming more and more, they're happening, and people are just I think because of social media, in a way, even though I don't like Facebook, it's connecting people to recognize that these things are happening, like the fires in these high-rise buildings, that and the buildings don't fall down. You know, people going, right. what's with that? You know, kind of thing. Anyway, it's
Mark. Now I think that you are right on about your restrictive application of the word false flag event. A false flag event usually has to do with starting a war. A false flag event isn't just some smaller event that occurs, such as a mass shooting at a supermarket or at a school or at a shopping mall. A false flag is precisely what you have indicated here. It is used to start a war.
Yep. Yes, it is. Yeah. I mean, it's and it always has been. As far as, right. You know, it's back to 1898 as far as I've known about the false flag events, and I have them well documented in my head. It's always the same. You need this. I mean, in my lifetime, of course, it happened in the Gulf of Tonkin, the 9/11, and the 312 babies, slaughtered in their incubators. That whole story. Now the Bashar al-Assad, 2 years ago in August, chemically his own people, which of course he didn't do. And you need always to rile up the people. It's before going into World War One, the numbers were astonishingly against going into the war. And World War Two, the same thing. And we were, of course, deceived by Wilson and Roosevelt. And we're deceived by all these. They're wonderful. The way it's actually pulled off. I mean, the whole Churchill and Roosevelt, the whole, putting sanctions on Japan to oil, and so they'd have to do it. And, it's all calculated. It's like, it was like game theory warfare before, now the late John Nash, who invented that whole thing, who just died last week in a terrible accident, him and his wife, bless their souls. But it is. And they always, you have to have something to rile the people up, and it works. And it still works. I don't think it's going to work as much, or else they're going to have it to make it a bigger event next time. And they most likely will.
Sure.
By the way, this is off subject, but it just came to my head and I wanted to bring it up sometime. So, I believe something's going to happen, and I don't say this very often, but I think something's going to happen next October 24th, 2016. And, it's just a feeling that I have. And it's something came to me. It's sort of like I listened to this voice kind of tapping into the morphic fields or whatever.
Sure.
And it, at last, it was one of the last times it happened was, it says, go find out when the day World War One was started, and it told me right away it was started on. It said it was Good Friday. Now go find out and go check it. And so I did. I went in, and it was April 6th, 1917, Friday, April 6th. And I said, "Oh my God!" And then I checked. Was that a Good Friday? Yes, it was. And of course, the Jews got us into that war, and they, on purpose, made sure that we would declare war on Good Friday. They do this kind of thing. So when I follow this, this is what happened to me about a week and a half ago. I've been saying for a while the financial meltdown is going to happen in September, October of next year, because that's historically when they do these type of things, because what I discovered when I wrote a piece called The Day the United States Died about Bobby Kennedy, I found out that they assassinate people or pull off major events during lame duck presidencies. LBJ came on national TV on March 31st, 1968 and said, "I'm not running for president. It's over. So it's an automatic lame duck, major power vacuum in Washington. 4 days later, they assassinate Martin Luther King. 63 days later, they assassinate Bobby. You fast forward 12 years, Carter Mondale loses to Reagan Bush, and John Lennon's assassinated during this power vacuum until Reagan was inaugurated on January 20th. And of course, then, supposedly Hinckley shot Reagan. he most likely didn't shoot him, but, and the Hinckley family, by the way, knew the Bush family extremely
exactly,
well
for, yes.
for a long
yeah.
time. So, yeah. and while they would use their own kid to be the patsy again, even though I don't think he fired the shot that hit Reagan and that whole thing. But anyway, it just, I believe that, and then they brought Lehman down on September 15th of 2008 when Baby Bush is a total lame duck. So I believe that the time to bring down the financial, even though it could happen tomorrow, and there's black swans everywhere. And a lot of people, there's a lot of things that look like September of this year. I'm not going to get into all the mechanics of it, but I believe it's probably going to be September, October next year. And then something came to me and said, look this number up, and I'll tell you what it is. The number was the day that Israel is 25,000 days old. I know it sounds strange, but that's what came to me, and I looked it up, and it's October 24th, 2016, 15 days before our election. And so just mark that day. I think something's going to happen. Anyway, boy, that was sort of running off subject, but number 49 is number one in television production and watching. It's called being programming for a reason. And the Jewish-owned television networks of the United States are the largest and most syndicated in the world. For the most part, these networks put out fear-based, dumbing-down, violent garbage. Household ownerships of television sets in the United States is 96.7%. The numbers of TV sets in the average household is 2.25. The average time spent watching a television per day is 5 hours and 11 minutes. Yeah, the average person will have spent 9 years watching television in their lifetime. And
that's
the hours
awful.
And here's even worse. The hours per year the average American youth spends in school is around 900 hours. The hours per year the average American youth watches TV is 1,600. The number of violent acts seen on television by the time a person is 18 is over 150,000. So, and the number of 30-second commercials, and it's probably more than that now, but 16,000. So, and it's these violent acts also, and these violent video games that really degrade your soul. And I'm not going to get into all that, but it is conditioning to desensitize oneself, and for their killing later on in life to bring them into being able to kill very easily. And this started with the end of World War II or the end of Korea War, I forget. Some captain figured out that around 85% of people in the armed forces, if they don't have to, if they have to shoot at the enemy but he's far away, they won't shoot to kill. The humanity comes out. And they found this out. And they turned this around by the time the end of the Vietnam War to 85% of people shoot to kill. And so they've stolen our humanity,
The kill rate is very high, between like World War II and the kill rate in Iraq, is much greater. And you could also from Vietnam War to, the wars in Iraq. A lot more people. They're just
And as you pointed out, I remember you pointing out the amount of civilians that are murdered, and this started in the Civil War, which I didn't know.
Right, and which was also a false flag with Fort Sumter.
Right. Right. It's I don't know an extraordinarily amount of about the Civil War, but as I've gotten up to speed in a little bit and over the last few years, and especially with some of your writings and interviews and others, it's it was a friend of mine, John Kaminsky, wrote a piece about, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago, about the exodus of supposedly of the Jews, and it was supposed to be from Egypt, and he said it most likely looks like it wasn't from Egypt, it was from the Arabian Peninsula, and I've heard this once before, and I read his piece, and I wrote him, and I said, you know, it's interesting because I really only go back about 125 years. Even though I know a lot more about the Jewish history because I did Holocaust revisionism, and I went back, you know, 3,300 years, and I was astonished, totally astonished with their whole legacy. But it was that what John brought out was, or awoken in me, was that this rewriting of history hasn't just been going on the last 125 years. It's been going on forever.
Indeed.
And I always like knew that, but didn't know it. It's sort of a strange dichotomy, but now it's made me so aware and cognizant that we've been deceived forever. And it's a terrible thing to say because then it's like, well, who do you believe? You know, when the court historians have always written what they want to write. I mean, this goes back all the way back to Egypt, and I know something about that and their wars and how they said they won, but there was a tie and all this kind of stuff. And it's always like that, but it's there's another little sidebar, but we're also number one in film production. And the United States is number one in film production with what is known as Hollywood being the leader. The great problem with this is the people who totally control this propaganda industry are once again Jewish. The films that they distribute always have their agenda. This is done either overtly or almost subliminally, but it's always there.
Mm-hmm.
And their films are fear, war, and violence based, every one of them. Mm-hmm. And this is a major psychological weapon. For their films are shown worldwide. And as Louis B. Mayer said, we make the movies that make people around the world think the way they think. And so it's a relentless, constant conditioning of opinion. And with the storylines between the Jews as the innocent victims or the super intelligent and brave saviors helping save the world. And I remember when I was writing this, I took a break and I was eating a late dinner and I turned on the TV and I saw the beginning of Saving Private Ryan.
Oh gosh, that's so brutal.
Yeah, and it was unbelievable. And there once again, you know, the sacrificing of our boys going onto the shores of D-Day. But anyway, when they could have went up through Italy, which they already had all sorts of anyway. But what I saw in that film. Was it near the end? I saw it in the middle of the film. He shows that he's Jewish in one part. He shows his but there was Ryan comes back and was at the Normandy cemeteries, and you see him looking at the Tom Hanks character. And
we have a break.
Okay, I'll pick it up on the other side.
All righty, back in 3 minutes.
The road must have a code that you can live by. Teach.
All righty, we are back. This is Deanna, and our guest tonight is Mark R. Elsis, E-L-S-I-S, and we are talking about his 50-page essay, article, 50 Ways the American Dream Has Become a Nightmare, and it can be found at AmericanExceptionalism.net, and Mark started at the bottom. So, and we are, and that's good. I think that we talked about this before on one of my programs, and
yes.
We got to like number 15, so it's good to start at the bottom. So maybe we'll meet somewhere.
And by the way, that the lead-in song was wonderful. Teach Your Children by Graham Nash, who I have a wonderful story about too, and met him. He's a decent man.
The music Clint uses is really good.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I suffer him, I get carried away listening to the music and I gotta say something here. But anyway,
There's a scene at the Normandy American Cemetery Memorial where the older Ryan is paying respects to those who saved him, particularly Captain John H. Miller. And he's at the grave standing in front of, and when the shot is taken from behind him, it shows the sea of thousands of white crosses. But in the very first row to the right, very conspicuously and lingering in the shot forever, is a Jewish grave marker. Mm. And then when the camera shot changes, and it's taken from the opposite, from the front, going to the back, the exact same thing happens. You see like a sea of white crosses, but once again in the right front marker is a Jewish grave marker, and it lingers up once again in the thing. I mean, this is, it's like right in your face, and this is done over and over, and you know, I've watched a lot of old films, and I remember one in particular. I didn't put it in this piece, but it's called Sergeant York. And it really pissed me off. I'm not going to get into it, but it's diabolical. And it's written by Jews, of course. And it was put out, I just looked at the date it was put out, September 27th, 1941. How perfect can you get? I mean, right. talk about you know, knowing beforehand what is going to happen.
Sure.
It's like, anyway, so you have... They're number one in film production, and this is people don't understand. You know, I haven't watched any of their films in the longest time, because I've realized for almost, you know, a decade or more now, that it's just so violent, and
right.
It's I mean, I remember going to one of the last films. It was right after 2011 with an ex-girlfriend that just passed away. And I was waiting for her, and, you know, outside. She went to the bathroom after the movie. And and I'm waiting, and I'm just, I take a sip of water, and I look around, and I see a poster for a movie that's coming up, and it's about war. And I'm done. I look around, and I look around to the other corner, and there's another big life-size poster, another movie about war. And I look into the other corner, and there's another poster about another movie about war. And so there's three posters out of the four corners, and all three of them had war pictures coming. And I went to myself, oh my God, these people are setting you up. Right after 9/11. This was like December of 2001. And she came out of the bathroom, and I said, look at this. And she goes, oh no, they can do that very quickly. And I said, no, they can't. And this is major Hollywood productions. This is done at least a year, 18 months in advance, at
sure.
least. So this is pre-planned. She didn't want to believe it. She did not want to believe it. But I was, anyway, it just was yet another... I mean, it's so actually in your face when you're, you know... It's like the movie They Live. When you put on the glasses, you see it, and you see it everywhere. And it's right in your face. So
yeah.
it's like, you know, I point this out to people, and because I'm very mathematical, and let's just say the Jews are 2% of the United States population. They're supposedly 1.7%, but whatever. 2%, so they're 1 in 50. And you see them on nudist cast or whatever, and you see the person interviewing one person, and they're both Jews.
Right.
And so that's 50 times 50. That's one, you know, one in 2,500 chance. And then they're interviewing another person. There's another Jew. So it's another 50 times 250 chance. I mean, it goes exponential. Sometimes it's like a million to one odds. And this happens over and over and over and over and over and over. And people just, I guess, you know, the Kool-Aid is good.
So yes, and they're just drinking it in and not even thinking where it's coming from, who writes this stuff, what the things that they're telling you. I mean, it is amazing to me that people can be taken in by all this.
And we try our best to, you know, that's why I wrote this piece. It was like, this is like a cold shower.
Sure.
You know, to, and at the beginning of it's very hard, because I'll tell you, I call a spade a spade. I don't care who it is.
Sure.
And of course, it's mostly this one group of parasites that are doing this.
Sure.
Because they control the money. So it's, anyway, so number 47 is we're number one in water consumption. And, it just, we just use an inordinate amount of water compared to anybody else in the world. And, number 46 is we're number one in energy and oil consumption. And this again, we're way above anybody else in the world. Like, pretty much, Europe uses like, almost half the energy that we use per person. And so we're just, we're very wasteful and you know, I remember like 30 years ago being in with a bunch of environmentalists, and we were talking about solar energy, renewable power, and this kind of stuff, and wind power. And these people were just, they were saying, you know, we can reach 5% or 10% by 2020. And you know, this is like 30, 35 years out.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started, and this was like everybody was saying this. One person said maybe we can do 20%, and I finally had enough, and I was like, what do you people think? So, you know, who is making you think such inside the box kind of stuff?
Sure.
When you know, I said, you know how long the Manhattan Project took? You know, it was less than 4 years. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I believe the Manhattan Project started on December 6, 1941, the day before Pearl Harbor,
which,
you know, there's another strange thing. But anyway, it just, I said, why can't we do 99% by 2020 and get off, you know, the oil but what I was even more concerned with was the way people think. And the way they it's sort of like they put nooses around themselves, collars around themselves, so they're very conditioned. They're unbelievable. That goes back to the TV and the film and school and you know, and everybody else. And it's once you get a majority to believe a certain way, then if you don't think that way, then oh my God, you're ostracized.
Sure.
And so it's a self-replicating type of a phenomenon. So anyway, it's us. We're very wasteful in our
resources.
Of resources.
Getting back to number 47, the water consumption.
Okay.
Now that you say that there, the people were number one per capita at 457,818 gallons per year. Now, this is this in addition to the water that corporations use, for instance, in fracking?
No, I don't think that's included. It's included in it. I can't remember because this is from
2013.
Well, 2014, but still, it's like, but
yeah.
I don't know if the fracking is there. And you know, we can thank Dick Cheney for his pushing through that whole thing when he was vice president, Halliburton. Don't forget he was the CEO of Halliburton when he pushed through the fracking, and we can't divulge what is inside the fracking, what they're injecting into the wells. Which,
oh,
by the way,
yes.
Which, by the way, the wells, the casings on the wells, the failure rate is extremely high.
Right.
And so the cement casings, as like the one out in the Gulf of Mexico that blew there and spewed all the oil out, which was another Halliburton. But that's the main thing that people don't recognize, that these casings, I believe after 30 years, even though these wells don't last that long, that half of them fail. And so, of course, they not only are using a lot of water, but they then pollute a lot of water.
Right.
Yes, and 1 gallon, I know 1 gallon of oil destroys 250,000 gallons of water, fresh water. And so, and you can see right now what just happened over at, you know, out in Southern California again, Santa Barbara. Right, and that's just a pretty small one. I mean, Santa Barbara, I think it was 40 years ago, had a major one that I think was the reason for double hull tankers or was something, or was one of the prerequisites to double hull tankers.
Sure.
But it's still, you know, these people have a grip, the oil companies, and we all know it. I mean, they're subsidized. The oil and gas and nuclear industries have been subsidized. I believe the IMF said, or the World Bank, or somebody big, which you know you don't usually trust, but they said it's between $1 and $2 trillion worth of like when you add up all the subsidies. And so once again, when you go back to you know using pretty much renewables such as wind or solar or geothermal there's other sources of fuel cells and all this kind of thing, it's they're not given the same subsidies at all. And it's no matter what, you know, solar now is wind has been cheaper than anything for a long time. And this is without what's known as externalities. If you added the externalities, which is something that the accountants, the CPAs, don't add into the mix, because if you did, then you'd have to actually pay for the consequences that you did, the detrimental side effects of what you did, such as in fracking, the long-term effects. It's just, you know, what happens is these companies, they just go under. And the whole fracking thing
it's terrible.
What a way.
It's absolutely terrible. It's deliberate. It is destroying natural resources all over the country.
Yeah,
it's creating some of the wealthy, holes.
Sinkholes. Yep. And earthquakes. It's just. But the groundwater pollution of it, and not knowing what is in it. It's sort of like the voting. It's a proprietary, you know, software. So you can't tell what's in voting. The voting machines. And I fought that back in 2004. Anyway, it's the same thing with you're not allowed to know what's in Coca-Cola. You're not allowed to know what we're injecting into, you know, to shoot this oil at. And that's, by the way, number 45 is we became number one in oil for a little while, oil production. It was because of the fracking. And as far as I know, the fracking, it needs like way above $80 a barrel just to break even.
Right.
And so, you know, this is now that it's around $60 a barrel, I believe, today, it's a very losing proposition. And yet, they've poured a lot of money into this. It's sort of like this quantitative easing fake money that is being, you know, $3 trillion over the last 4 or 5 years has been, you know, printed up out of nowhere, actually, keystroke entries out of nowhere.
Sure. Shifted over to Halliburton.
Well, into the stock markets and all these, right, and all of these companies that are, this is one of the horrible side effects of it is this shale. It's just, anyway, you know, I remember I saw this movie Gasland by a Jewish director.
Oh, yes, that's a great movie.
It was a very good film, and Gasland too. And mm-hmm. they were rather good and strong films about this whole shenanigans about this and every time I see a film I always say it never goes far enough. They never, you know,
right.
They just, it's sort of like there was this film Cowspiracy that he did go far enough because the world's funding got cut off and it was anyway. But and so that's number 45 is that because of the shale, we became, for I think a very short time, number one in oil production again over Russia and Saudi Arabia, even though I don't if that was ever true really, but it seems. Go ahead.
There is enough oil on the north in Alaska that
supposedly,
we really
yes.
We shouldn't have to do any fracking at all.
Well, you know, to me, I don't like the byproduct of the whole industry. I think if we can do solar or wind, which are very viable, mm-hmm. and very cost effective, and stop the oil, stop and natural gas. By the way, the natural gas is a bridge to renewables. So that's a bunch of BS. Okay, because natural gas in the short term, when they flare it out and the leakage in the pipes and everything, it's worse than gas. I mean, it's worse than the oil. And people don't, there's again these externality types of things that they don't take into account. It's twice as good as oil. Yeah, it is on the front side. But, you know, when you count up everything, the leakage and the flare-outs and all this other stuff, and that it's 100 times, anyway, it just...
More toxic to the environment than...
Yeah, it's like...
Than the free energy that we should all have access to.
Or the renewable energy till we get to even better sources of energy that may be like 0 point or whatever. Which, mm-hmm. once again, I mentioned this guy, Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, who I've been in correspondence with and I've followed his for a long time. And he came up with something interesting. It was one of his lectures that was saying, well, you know, everybody, when they bring up 0 point energy or da da da, it's like, you know, people look and say, well, you know, you can't do that. It's against Newton's second law of thermodynamics and blah, 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 blah. And he goes, well, why don't we just like put up some kind of a prize of $1 million and see and have really unbiased scientists judge these instruments instead of everybody just poo-poos them because it's impossible. And that's why I like this guy, because he's sort of all this other scientific stuff that he's a heretic. Everybody that's swept under the rug, he's the guy that pulls up the rug and goes, hey, you got.
Yeah. All righty. We're got going for a 3 minute break. We'll be right back.
Cool high places must be the ones who start to mold a new reality closer to the heart. Closer to the heart.
All righty, we are back. Our guest tonight is Mark Alsus, and we are talking about American exceptionalism. And of course, the whole point of having a controlled power, of being able to control the power, as you've indicated here, is so that they can shut us down. And so if they take all the resources and control the resources that would otherwise be free and available to all of us, they can control it and shut us down.
Nikola Tesla.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, when I first learned his story, it was 35 years ago. And I was astonished. And here's something that a lot of people probably don't know about Tesla. When he built Wardenclyffe out in Long Island, everybody knows he got shut down by J.P. Morgan because it wasn't just for radio, which Marconi stole, and actually Tesla won after he died. The Supreme Court judgment gave it back to Tesla because Marconi stole like 18 of his patents or whatever. It was that Wardenclyffe was for free energy, free electrical energy, wireless energy, I should say. And when J.P. Morgan and the backers found this out, they pulled the plug on him. But this was, he picked a place in the North Shore of Long Island called Shoreham. And so he put up this power plant that never really got online. And then when I was growing up, out in Shoreham, Long Island, they were building the Sherm nuclear power plants, and they spent like $6 billion, and they never went online.
Wow.
And I always went to myself, what's the likelihood of that? That, you know, with Tesla built, when I read about Tesla, I already knew about, you know, where Sherm was just happening, or just about finished happening, and I was like, my God, Sherm, Long Island. It's the same place. And anyway, so it's just this, it's sort of like, it harkens me back to, here's another strange story out of the blue, Robert Goddard, which is the father of our rocketry in the United States. And he was in Cambridge, Mass, and his rockets got too big. And so Charles Lindbergh gave him money and financed him to move out in the middle of nowhere into this little isolated place called Roswell, New Mexico.
Right.
And then, of course, everybody knows Roswell, New Mexico, because supposedly in 1947, you know, an alien spacecraft crashed. And I always found it just extremely coincidental that the father of American rocketry, by the way, that Wernher von Braun put to shame, but moved out to this little backwater in the middle of nowhere called Roswell, New Mexico, and then supposedly an alien spacecraft. And this guy, the head of our rocketry for our country, and that's where an alien spacecraft crashed. Of course, I find it utterly preposterous that, you know, of course there are space beings, and I saw a major ship once, and just unbelievable on Siesta Beach with three other people documented. I mean, unbelievable. Mothership. Huge. The most gorgeous thing I've ever seen. It just huge beyond belief and iridescent, no sound, and then poof, gone. And a mothership, how big? I don't know. Huge. And but anyway, there are, of course, space beings. You know, there's a few hundred. I guess I'll pick it up on the other side.
I guess we're going to a break. We will be right back.
Flying out of here.
Yes, we're flying out of here.
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you. Tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel. Who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men. Machine men.
Alrighty, we are back. This is Deanna, and I am subbing for Clint tonight, and actually the rest of the week. Our guest tonight is Mark R. Elsis, and his website, the one we are concentrating on tonight, is AmericanExceptionalism.net, and we are just about to go to 43, but we were talking about Tesla, which is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I was, what happened to him? I actually tried to get a monument for Tesla. I worked on it for a while I lived in New York, because Tesla spent his last years behind what is in Bryant Park, behind the public library, the major public library in New York. And they finally put up a little street sign. I actually went to Westinghouse, because he sold his patents to save Westinghouse and all that. I did a lot of work to put up a monument for this guy, and got shot down every which way I turned.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I know. I didn't realize it back then. I was sort of a little naive, but, you know, and innocent. But anyway, you know, about the aliens, and we go back to it. I didn't want to. I think a few things are totally preposterous. That, first of all, look, there are in our galaxy, there's probably 200 to 300 billion stars. And there are probably well over 100 billion galaxies. Okay, so there's more stars out there than there are every grain of sand on every beach on the planet. So, so people don't recognize the vastness of the universe. Okay, and with that said, there are life out there. It's teeming with life. Look how much we've evolved in the last 100 years. Now imagine, and I call what we're at right now the atomic company human evolution. We're about to go extinct. It's either we make or break, blah, 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 blah. And if we don't, we're going down. And I think most species, when they get to this point, don't get through this bottleneck in where we are now. But I think enough do. And I think if once you evolve, you become enlightened. You have to be enlightened to get past where we are now, or else you don't make it. And I believe once you become enlightened, you don't become disenlightened. So all of these, by the way, all of these Hollywood killing films like Star Wars and all this crap, I think it's totally bogus. Because I think once, if you're enlightened, you're not going to fight each other. You're past
it. Of course not.
And if you know how to space travel and come to our Earth through wormholes or what have you, warp speed, warp drive, da da, whatever, you're not going to crash.
Right.
I mean, it's just, these things sort of make me laugh.
Sure.
You know, that
sure.
People actually believe
this stuff, yeah.
That, you know, that they come here and they crash here. Ooh,
right.
Okay. You know, and always the Hollywood, Jewish Hollywood films about, you know, these, all of these war. It's always war. And,
right.
You know, spacemen are going to be, you know, if they're that enlightened, you don't become disenlightened. That's what it comes down to. And
sure.
Our whole infrastructure is crumbling. And you see this in everything, and in our electrical power grids. It says the United States power grid has more blackouts than any other country in the developed world, according to new data. And it's the United States power grid loses almost 300% more than it did in 1984. So we're three times more likely in the last 30 years for electric to go down.
Sure.
And so
is this deliberate, or is it because of the infrastructure, or is it both?
Well, it's sort of like, I remember when you talked, you said you went over to China, and I don't know if you talked about the maglev trains, but you know.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
unbelievable. The whole country is just
right.
Alive with building, and you can see all of the corporations alive over there, or growing. Over there, that we used to have in this country.
Yeah,
it is the up and coming nation to live in.
Yeah, wasn't it Henry Kissinger that brought Nixon over there in 1970?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kissinger's behind a lot of stuff.
Yes, he is. Well, he was a made man for very early on.
And, oh, absolutely.
And
okay.
A lot of. Yeah, go ahead, right.
Let's go to 43.
Yes, 43 is, we're number one in autism. And, you know, nobody's 100% sure what is behind this. I mean, a lot of people think it's the thimerosal in the vaccinations, the mercury in the mm-hmm. vaccinations. Other people think it's, you know, we have more than 90,000 chemicals, man-made
right.
chemicals now that are floating around. And
right. the glyphosate,
we don't know. We don't. Oh my God! Yeah, and they keep on raising the level for it.
Right.
The 10 times. And these things have permeated everything and everybody, and it's so we've it, the these things that that's what I was about the oil, the asthma rates about the burning of the oil.
Mm-hmm.
We don't. You know, we this is an externality that nobody accounts for.
Right.
It's the asthma rates and autism rates have gone through the roof. Literally, asthma, they say autism, perhaps one out of every two boys in 2025 will be autistic. This used to be
right.
It used to be one in, I think, 20,000 boys.
Right.
It happens
and,
a little
bit. And that is what Dr. Seneff said on my program. She talked about this, with the glyphosate situation. So, yeah, there's a lot of reasons, but there's external toxic poisons and then the ones that you inject right into your child are the ones that the doctors...
And aspartame, there's a link between autism and aspartame also that I read about.
Yes.
Now, aspartame was brought to you by that piece of...
garbage. Rumsfeld, yeah.
Right, when he was head of Searle. And,
right.
And he's the guy that had the juice... when Reagan got in to change the FDA, and he got it pushed through.
Yeah.
And aspartame probably is like the number one worst thing they put into food. And you know, not just diet sodas, but it's like it's
in everything. They're trying to get it into dairy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's right. It's just it becomes ubiquitous. And why is it? It's just this kind of stuff, you know, it brings me back to, you know, the day John F. Kennedy was assassinated, you know, boom in my mind, because it's a free-for-all. And it's like, and now we have these new trade, you know, here I jump off, but these new trade things that are going to totally give our sovereignty away to corporations. They've written the laws that are going to supersede our laws.
Sure.
So it's and you know, you can't even see it. You have to go down to the bottom of the Congress and you can't write anything about it, and you just look at it and it's like we have let this happen. So but autism, I mean, if there's a canary in the coal mine, it's the autism rights, and that it's just, you know, I woke up to a story today about a boy that drowned in a lake here in Florida, and he's a 5-year-old autistic boy. There's another externality of externalities. He's dead most likely because he's autistic.
Sure.
And they're all deceived. And then when you have that Jenny McCarthy come out, because Jim Carrey used to marry Jim Carrey, and she was a Playboy pinup, and she's a beautiful woman. But,
mm-hmm.
but not only that, but very, you know,
smart.
Yes, smart, and has guts, and has a child that's autistic.
Right.
And so, I mean, and of course, as a beautiful, due diligent mother, looked into it and understood we have a problem. And,
sure.
And has enough clout to actually get out there articulately and say stuff and gets, you know, steamrolled. That's what happens.
Right.
And it's like, this is actually the kind of thing that almost makes me lose hope. And I'm never one to lose hope. I'm the person you freaking, one of those things you knock down, it comes right back up.
Sure.
But this kind of stuff, that it is just so beyond overwhelming. And yet we are, like Jenny McCartney gets steamrolled on it. I mean, it's just, and ridiculed. And
right.
So it's like, it almost gets me, and you know, so, anyway, the number one, we're number one in vaccinations of children, which is number 42. And that's why I sort of had it in that
together,
order.
Together, right.
Right. And now they're trying to, from what I've gathered, pass a new law that says you don't have any religious out.
Exemptions, yeah.
Exemptions, right. And who's that lady that does great work on? Oh, she's always on Dr. McCullough. Anyway, Barbara Fisher.
Right.
And she's done just 30 years worth of work because her son had autism. And she realized it was vaccinations. The most likely is the guilty. And we're, you know, it's like by the age a child is 6 is given 48 vaccinations. And by the way, this, the SIDS, you know, sudden infant death
right.
syndrome. This is, and they blame it on parents a lot, like the shaken baby syndrome.
Sure.
And how many parents are in jail because the kid died of a vaccination, and then they charged a parent with, you know, it's sort of, anyway, it's sort of, we have, by the age of 6, a child is given 48 doses of 14 vaccinations. By the time he's 18, a total of 70 doses of 16 vaccinations.
Right.
It's interesting that the United States is 34th in the world for its for children under 5 mortality rate.
Right.
So our mortality rate, and you see the vaccinations. It's the same with you know, the fluoride in our water and the they say, you know, about dental decay of teeth, and it's this propaganda because you see. Most of the world, of course, is not fluoridated. And the dental, the cavity rates, with or without fluoride, the curve is the same. They've gone
right.
down.
Sure.
It's once again, somebody's got control of not only the back end, but they got the control of the medical. And
right.
who is it? The lady that's on a Sunday night's, Daniels.
Dr. Daniels.
I believe you were the person that first interviewed her on RBN, were you not?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, I think, yeah, and kudos to you, because I listen to her every once in a while, and she is just like a wealth of information and extremely upfront and smart, quite bright.
Yeah, very bright. I listen to all of her programs, and a lot of them I re-listen to because... there's, you know, some things you don't just get the first time that you listen. So, and sometimes, depending on your circumstances change, and you say, "Oh, I didn't get that app the first time that I listened to this." So, yeah, she's great.
Yeah, we're overwhelmed with information, huh? And
yes.
So it's and sometimes we don't resonate with it. Because it's
right.
not, you know, it goes in and out. You know, a friend of mine in New York that's a really good artist goes, sometimes you have to hit people 27 times with something.
Sure.
Before, you know, he goes, he used to say to me, why don't you write for 3 different IQs, Mark, when you put out your work?
Well,
you could write for over, yeah, you could write for 80 to 100, 100 to 120, and over 120. And he goes
good.
There for you, cover your base, Mark.
That's
and
funny.
I was like, oh, man. Yeah, I know. He has quite the sense of humor. And anyway, we're number one, number 41. We're number one in the ingestion of high fructose corn syrup. So if you don't have aspartame in it, you have high fructose corn syrup. And this is, by the way, this is now, you want to talk sort of about a conspiracy. This is given such subsidies, the corn industry, by the federal government, that it's now put in everything.
Right. And it's GMO.
Yeah,
most of the corn that's produced in this country is GMO. And so even people who don't eat corn, if you ingest anything that has corn syrup in it, you are still getting GMO. And who knows how that affects your body, how that affects your genetic makeup.
You know, there's the evidence is getting stronger and stronger for leaky gut and
right.
Just an assortment of unbelievable ailments. And, you know, this is the damn the torpedoes thing again. You know, it's just let it go. And we're doing this now with nanotechnology, with GMOs. We're on the cusp of doing it with robots. And I don't know if I've ever talked about this, but I'll go into it very quickly here, but because I don't think it's in this piece, but we're going to reach singularity or IA, artificial intelligence, between some people say as soon as 5 years. I don't think so, but up to 25 years. Okay, once this happens, the machines and the robots will be as smart as us. Now, they're just going to keep on getting smarter and smarter and smarter and smarter, of course. And soon, you know, they'll be able to download a PhD in a second. And so, and then they'll be able to self-replicate. And the people that are building these machines, the DARPAs and the world, people for DARPA, Google has bought nine of these major companies, of course, including Boston Dynamics. They have a cheetah now that runs 34 miles an hour, jumps over freaking 40 centimeter high blocks while it's running. Okay?
Wow.
And they're called killer robots. Okay? They're autonomous. They're going to go around, instead of the cops, they're going to go around and kill you like the drones. And what's going to happen? You have really nefarious people programming these things. What's going to happen, and I'm stating here, in 2015 on June 1st, that this is probably now the thing that will take us out. These machines will happen, and they will turn on us. And they are going to see us, that when they can self-replicate, meaning build themselves, they're going to see us for the useless pieces of carbon that they think we are. And a lot of top people in the world have been saying this. I've been saying this for quite a while, but over the last 2 or 3 years, it's coming up on me that it's here. And and people, I mean, like Stephen Hawking, you know, who's the smartest guy in the world, is saying this. Tesla, the head of Tesla, the Jew Musk, is saying it. A lot of people that realize that this is a technology that, you know, like GMOs or nuclear power or the, you know, all anything, the fluoride in the water, all of these, or nanotechnology, all of these new technologies where we don't know the end ramifications. Mm-hmm. We just let the business model run amok before we, you know, and then when we do know, such as like cigarettes, we deny it forever. Or now the electromagnetic, every kid is going to have brain cancer.
EMF, yeah.
That is, you know, there's that film that you, once again, that English film, Resonance, Beings of Frequency.
Mm-hmm.
I would tell everybody, go see that documentary. It's online for free. Go check it out. Because we are now millions of times the EMF that we used to have. And we're all at the Schumann resonance of 7.83 megahertz. The Earth resonates at that, and so do we. And we are being... talk about... anyway, it's the this high fructose corn syrup. Wonder why the kids are bouncing off the walls too, huh?
Sure.
And it's like, and they have ADHD, and oh, let's drug the kids. And all these kids, you know, infants are now giving these drugs. I just learned this, that they're giving these antipsychotic stuff.
Sure.
And like when I was writing this is somewhere in this document, is that I think it said. between the women between 40 and 60, I think it's at 38% are on antidepressants in this country.
I have figures for that in my book, and I also cite the number of infants that are on antipsychotics, and
infants. I mean, that one just got to me. But go ahead. I'm sorry to cut you off.
It's pretty bad. In fact, I'm going to spend the rest of the week talking about the FDA and how the corporate criminals have taken over the FDA, and some of the stuff that is in your article here. We're going to be talking about that the rest of the week.
Excellent, because it's a revolving door.
Sure.
I mean, it's like blatant beyond belief revolving door. Now, like I brought up earlier, these free trade agreements are anything but free. And you know, anything the government comes out with now, it's the exact opposite of whatever Orwellian title they want to put on it. Number 40 was number one in ingestion of aspartame. So we went over that. Number 39, number one in the growing and eating of genetically modified organisms. And we don't want these things. And you see this in, you know, some of the votes that have happened. Now, I don't think they're going about it the right way, actually, to have these referendums to say we want it labeled. I think, like, the Monsantos of the world are going, yeah, go ahead, try that. Because
sure.
That's not saying we want them outlawed.
No, it's just saying we want to be notified before they
kill us. Right, we just want them labeled. Right, that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is... Let's outlaw them, get rid of them until we have scientific, undeniable scientific, double-blind proof for 40, 50 years out on them.
Right.
Go ahead.
If it's designed to kill the certain organisms, it's going to kill us too. They're designed to kill bugs that are eating crops. Well, gosh, they're poisoning dandelions and all the other stuff. They're poisoning the groundwater. They're poisoning the planet with this.
But Deanna, it's gonna grow more food per acre and feed the starving.
Baloney!
I love the way they
alter things. Yeah.
Yeah. Just it's beautiful. It really is. It's you know, and then they find out, you know, that it, of course the yield per acre is not. It's less.
Right.
And the soil, they have to use more and more, and the insects are now becoming immune to it. Of course, as they
the ones that live. Yeah.
You're right. That's what happens with anything.
Sure. The ones that they haven't killed with glyphosate are not going to eat the GMO foods. They will go and they will find something else to eat or...
And I like those brave people that the farmer would out up in Canada out there, and he was developing his own seeds, him and his father and his grandfather and for like, you know, 60 years or something, and his own soy, and it got blown into his,
right?
You know, and that whole it was a whole movie about it. It just and Monsanto has the balls to sue him for stealing their product when they contaminated his product. Yeah.
Amazing.
I mean, it's everything is amazing. It's beyond the pale. And, you know, that's why, you know, I go back to November 22nd, and it's just like, and it's been in our lifetime. So we've been the witnesses to it, like our age, Diana. It's just, and it's, and we bless you, because the work you do, you're nonstop and putting out the best information you can all the time, and that's all we can do, and that's what I've dedicated my life to for the longest time, is to try to find the truth. And you know, I've gone down wrong blind avenues and all sorts of things and been fooled but it's getting harder and harder to fool me now.
Sure.
You know, and it's sort of like, it's because we've become seasoned at this, and You know, it's sort of like that old Who song, you know, we don't get fooled again. And right. It's but, you know, it goes back to like 2008 when, you know, I knew a few people that were going to vote for Barry. And really smart and intelligent people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, and I was like, you're kidding with me. And they weren't.
Right.
And, you know, they got their rude awakening and whatever. It's like now, you know, I see, I go on Facebook now and then, I see, you know, good meaning people with this Bernie Sanders guy. Mm-hmm. And I go, and I have this little thing. I said, so let me see, the lesser of two evils has now gotten us to want to back this guy who last summer voted to condone the murder of 2,200 Palestinians. So this guy is an accessory to murder and 1,500 women and children. And you're because he espouses this BS, you believe him, but he condoned murder of women and children.
Right.
So this is how low... And I explain this to people rather nicely, and they still don't care.
Right.
They say, you're not seeing the bigger picture. I say, no, you're not seeing the bigger picture. I say, right. You know, it's just... So we've gotten to where we don't care that this guy has condoned mass murder of women and children.
Or they just simply don't remember, or they don't know. They haven't put
together. No, this is after. I make sure they know. And then they come back. Some of them say, you know what, Mark, you have a point. But he's the best of the... And I say...
The best? It'd be better to pick someone out of the phone book.
Well, you know what? My sister turned me on a long time ago to this French guy that said just that. And I remember watching his videos like 9 years ago. I can't remember his name. There's a whole little movement in France about that.
Mm-hmm.
About picking people, like, literally out of the voter
mm-hmm.
thing. And you much, much, much better. And right. When she first told me this, I sort of laughed. And then I said, oh, my God, yeah.
It's right.
Just like,
one of my favorite movies, and I don't watch a lot of movies, but I think probably one of my favorites in the top 10 is Dave. Remember that movie, Dave,
politician?
He was just a regular common guy, but he looked exactly like the president, and so they brought him in, and he turned the country around. I mean, he brought in his bookkeeping friend, and they figured out how to fix the budget, and it was just an amazing, amazing movie.
I remember that I didn't see the whole thing of Dave. I just caught like a piece of it, and I remember something about the president. But it's what you're saying. It's an example of a regular person, right? Because of course that's what I tried to explain to people also, that you know, you can't like become a dog catcher now unless you kiss Israel's ass,
right?
Okay, and they're going, huh? And I'm going, okay, all right, like, let's, you know, I try not to deal with people that are sort of not up to speed that much, but every now and then you get people that are...
You must have very few friends.
I do have very few friends, of course. Yeah, because, yeah, well, especially since I put out Holocaust Revisionism, I've become...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I've become...
An anti-Semite.
Worse than that.
Yeah, worse than that.
It's just, yeah, when people, you know, if I meet new people and da da da, and it doesn't matter how you broach the subject with most people, you know it. I mean, it's just,
sure.
Sometimes I, you know, I just go along and be nice and da da da, and then somehow they'll stumble upon something or say the word Nazi or something. Or something will come up about, you know, they fall for the apologist excuses. And it's like, and I have to point out that these things are not done by accident.
Right.
You know,
okay,
sort of like
we are going to a break. I think I hear the music there in the background.
I do it. Yeah, it
ain't
me.
Recession, low GDP, nations close to collapsing, and subprime loans, foreclosed homes, and people's taxes spent to bail out too big to fail. AAA banks again. Fear levels rising as the U.S.
Oh my goodness, that's quite a list. Alrighty, we are back, and Mark R. Elsis is our guest. The website that he is talking about is American exceptionalism.net. And we do have a caller who's been online waiting patiently. So let's take a real quick call. Kent in West Virginia. Kent.
Yeah, hi, Deanna. I sent both you and Mark a couple of emails. Now, you mentioned seeing a UFO. I sent a link to cloudappreciationsociety.org, and there are clouds that look like UFOs, and I imagine he saw a cloud. I sent you a link. It's called a lenticular cloud. And the Canadian who beat Monsanto is Percy Schmeiser.
Yeah.
I want to do some research on that.
It wasn't, by the way, Kent, it wasn't a cloud at all. I mean,
yeah.
It was it moved in. I was sitting on Siesta Beach with my then girlfriend and an older couple, and was there for approximately 8 to 12 seconds, Kent, and it was enormous. It came. And it was iridescent white, huge. I can't even tell you the size of it. It was so huge. And it came, and it was behind it. It was like gasoline, the fumes, but it was totally silent. And we all four of us saw the same thing because it went poof, and it was gone. So I don't know any clouds that go poof, and they're there, and then they're gone. And this thing, I'm telling you, huge. I don't know how big. It was enormous. And so the first thing I did was I went to the patriarch of this Mr. Jones, who's been through it all, knew LBJ and all, this great guy. And anyway, not that he knew LBJ, but I said, "What did you see, Mr. Jones?" And his jaw was down, and he goes, "Oh my God." And he was a man of faith. And I went to Mrs. Jones. "What did you see?" Same thing. And then I went to Sarah, my girlfriend. And we all saw exactly the same thing. So it was not a cloud. And I actually, my webmaster at the time was very into UFOs. And he put it into whatever, UFO Digest or something. And anyway, it was a very groundbreaking, kind of enlightening to see it. It sort of changes your life in a way, to see such something that, you know, most people poo-poo, and it's like, all right, you know, whatever. I always said beforehand, you know, of course, the universe is teeming with life. I mean, it's, like I said before, the numbers bear this out. Although I know how hard it is to be in the Goldilocks zone and all this other kind of stuff that goes along with it, I'm well aware of the mathematical numbers behind to create a life, extremely difficult in many respects. But yet, the numbers bear it out, that it's teeming with life. And so, anyway, I saw what I saw, and it wasn't a cloud. And it's, let's leave it at that, because I don't want to go into it any further. But and I know you get stigmatized as soon as you say something like that. You know, it's like, oh my God. So let me see. So you believe that there was no Holocaust, really, and you saw a UFO. Okay, great. You know, anyway, it is what it is. And
sure.
But go ahead.
All righty.
I'll send you the link, and you can check it out.
Thank you very much, though, Kent. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Kent. All righty.
So it's yeah, more calls?
No.
Okay. So number 38 we went over is that fluoridation. It's about 73% of the fresh water we drink is fluoridated in the United States. They just came out, I think, in the last couple of weeks and said we're going to lower the amounts of fluoride in the water.
Great. I guess everything else that they put in our food and drink has done a really good job, so they can lower fluoride.
Right, yeah. People don't understand. It's in not only toothpaste, but so is juices, sports drinks, beers, many processed foods, including infant foods, grape products, dried fruits, dried beans, cocoa powder, walnuts, tea leaves, you know, black tea. That it goes on and on. And many pharmaceutical products. It just, yeah, it's everywhere. And it's like, you know, I know a lot about this because it just disturbs me to no length, because it's there to really make us unenlightened.
Right.
This is like really nefarious, this fluoride thing, and the way that it's propped up to be one of the greatest things of the 20th century.
Yeah. And people actually and get fluoride treatments on their teeth.
And the way they've sold the doctors, and you know, you put the white coat on and they say it's good, you know, people believe it. It's the brainwashing. Once, you know, I might have said this before on your show, it's sort of like Hitler is the poster boy for evil. That's what people think. And I've learned that anytime they're trying to shove anything down your throat, it's the exact opposite.
Right.
And that's my rule of thumb that I go by, and I have since the Challenger explosion of 86.
Sure.
And it's like, and fluoride is like the poster boy for this, you know, one of the greatest advents of the 20th century. And it's like, oh God. That and the vaccinations. And, you know, I remember seeing the whole vaccination thing about, it wasn't the vaccinations that stopped the diseases.
Yeah, better hygiene. Yeah,
exactly. Yep. You see the curve on it in the 20th century, and it wasn't vaccinations at all.
Right.
And it's just, anyway, it's the con, that's right. Who owns the AMA? Oh, that's right. It's the same people that have your best interest at heart.
Right.
You know, it's, so it's, we're also almost number one in divorce. Only Russia and Belarus are in front of us in divorce. And I think there's many reasons for that. We're working
moral
so
decay.
Much. It's the moral decay. I mean, it's just, Kaminsky sent me, and then somebody else sent me today about Bruce Jenner has come out on a.
Yeah, is that amazing?
Some New York magazine or something, I don't know. But it was Andy Leibowitz, the Jew photographer, that took his picture. And then the writer, of course, was another female Jew that wrote about him. I was like,
wow.
Oh, great. But Bruce Jenner, going back, you know, the decathlon champ in Montreal in 76. Anyway.
Amazing.
You know, by the way, there's these things, you know, I said 90,000 chemicals, plus man-made chemicals, there's a group of them called endocrine disruptors.
Right.
And what they're doing is turning males into females.
And that is soy. Soy products do that also.
And soy to a much lesser extent, much less than the endocrine disruptors, much less. These things, and there's a group of them that they're called endocrine disruptors, that it's just phenomenal. The closer the Japan did it, you know, for every 206 births, there's supposed to be 106 boys and 100 girls because boys kill themselves, and it all evens out. But the closer you are to these chemical plants and everything, the fewer boys, you know, the genetic, the genitals of boys have been mutating now over the last 30 years, 20 years, 10 years, more and more and more. The sperm count is plummeted beyond belief, but they're turning males into females. Now, and by the way, I don't care what people do. You know, with themselves or consenting adults. I don't care what you do sexually. Whatever. As long as it's consenting adults, go for it. And it's not hurting anybody else. Really, I don't care. Do it. If you find happiness in it, fine, great. But it's the promotion of the agenda to children that disturbs me. And the outright doing it in all the films and TV and all this to push this agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and look, in one respect, I know that the hidden teenage suicide rate, which was alarming, was a lot to do with being homosexual and not being able to cope with it. So,
right.
in a certain respect, there's openness about it's all right once you hit puberty or something, not before. I mean, and it's an agenda. So anyway, it's just, but this whole Bruce Jenner, you see the way the Bruce Jenner, you'll get, you know.
Well, they have to make somebody that's very popular like that and very masculine. Then gosh, if he's going to do this, then it's open for anybody. It's just like getting Angelina Jolie, who said she had a double mastectomy. Well, gosh, we better all go and get our boobs cut off if she can do it, and it's something good, because people like to have these role models. But a lot of this stuff also happens to the radiation, the imaging of fetuses that are in the womb.
The ultrasound?
The ultrasound, yeah. I mean, that has a lot to do with it also, is that you are sterilizing these kids before they're ever born and changing their systems, their proclivities, all kinds of stuff.
It's just we're poisoning. You know, that's the whole one of the things in here about how we love our children. But you know, there's only four countries in the world that don't give maternal paid leave.
Right.
The United States, and three of them are in Africa, and the other one is the United States.
Right.
We're number one in prisons, we're number one in defense, we're number one in stealing of the banking, and you know, it's just we're number one in small arms. We caused all these wars. You know, I remember reading there's an average of 44 wars or skirmishes going on every day since World War II ended, and
right.
It's just. You know, because we have our armies in over 150 countries bringing democracy.
Sure.
And so, and of course we're not there to bring democracy or we're helping humanitarily helping them.
Right,
It's of course enslaving the people and stealing their resources, and it's done, you know, through colored revolutions, outright revolutions, assassinations, bribes of the people, bribes of the top people, or you know, overthrows of the top people, get our own top people, and whatever it takes, it doesn't matter. We'll do, and we have been doing, as you well know.
They, not we.
I don't have any part of this. Well, it's. My friend in New York once again says, anybody who gives these people money is culpable.
Yeah.
And I'm not going there, but but you're correct in what you just said. It's we, because me and you and a lot of people are trying our best to out all of these. You see, what it comes to me is like, I see things in a mathematical way, and it's all of these things are huge red flags. Everything I brought up, and mm-hmm. it's not just like one thing. It's not like the, you know, aspartame or the fluoride or the 90,000 chemicals or the oil all over the place or the nuclear power or the EMF, the radiation. By the way, like I said, I just passed it over. All these children. You're going to see brain cancers go through.
Oh, absolutely! You already have.
Yes, yeah. It's beginning to happen. Yes, and from that film, Resonance, Beings of Frequency, you'll see what it does to the melatonin and the free radicals of our system. Okay, with Wi-Fi and everything, how it shuts you down. As you think you're awake and you don't produce what it takes to get the free radicals out of your body. Therefore, what's going to happen is cancers are going to come, not just in the brain because of you holding it up, because of you're not flushing your body out as you would naturally do, because the Wi-Fi is interrupting. It's thinking, it's making your brain think it's daylight when it's not. So
right.
And we see all around us. We see, you know, the bees are
dying.
We're killing the bees. Oh, what do we need them for? They only pollinate what? 40% of our food.
Yes.
I mean, it's.
Thank Roundup for that.
Yeah, thank you. It's a lot of different things. It's accumulative is what I'm trying to get at.
Sure.
It's like there's so many things on so many levels that we're doing. It's like number 36. We're number one in anxiety disorders and depression in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're making us think we are.
They're making us think, yes.
It is both, I think, sides of the coin, which they own anyway. But we're being worked to death and no vacations and everything. It's once again, a cumulative thing. And so, we are being forced, and that's why the divorce, and that's why this anxiety and depression, and they have the drugs for it. So the thing that doesn't get me, that these drug commercials, like on TV, which only us in New Zealand, I believe, are allowed to have them on our national TVs, are you see the amount of side effects that they have to list. And
right,
then,
but you notice when they list them, they always show somebody that's really happy, and everybody, or not everyone, but generally people think, oh gosh, that's not going to happen to me, and that's just, that's just something that could happen, but rarely does happen. They put those, the side effects, they list those side effects as a public notice so that right. you're not going to be able to sue the drug company. That is a yeah. big reason why they do that.
That's, it's nice that your, all the autistic children's parents can't sue them either. Yeah, it's a nice little loophole they got there.
Sure.
It's the same kind of thing, and but it's you know, then you have right after these drug commercials, which were what, like every other commercial or something, and you have a commercial for a lawyer saying that drug that you said 5 years ago, we're suing the people for it.
Sure.
You know, it's so it's sort of it almost makes me laugh when I do turn on TV and go through the channels and I have and I do it on purpose now. Because I can't believe the unbelievable dumbing down of everything and the craziness of the commercials to push stuff on you.
Right.
It was like one of them was for this, I don't know, some kind of walker or something that, and this lady says, oh, I lost 62 pounds and I, you know, I was pregnant, but it wasn't just baby fat. I was eating donuts. I yelled out to myself. I went, oh my God, yeah, there's an American. You, more or less, you big fat pig. You're eating donuts while you're pregnant.
Right.
You know, there, you know, so it's just, it's, we're number 35, number one in breast augmentation surgery because, you know, the women need bigger breasts.
Right.
You know, it's just, because that's what, I'm attracted to. I'm attracted to some kind of, and you know what? One of my girlfriends had it, and it was, just so weird. And I was just, and this is like huge industry, and
right.
It's like, and you know, there was would I have it at the end of this? There, and now rather recent.
Okay.
New cosmetic surgery has been gaining momentum. Okay.
Yes.
Maybe we
whether
should.
Whether it's your nose or your boobs or whatever. Okay.
No, downstairs.
We are going to a break. Good time to go to a break here. All right. We are back. This is Deanna, and I'm subbing for Clint all week. Our guest tonight is Mark R. Elsis. His website, the one that we are focusing on tonight, is AmericanExceptionalism.net. And we are working our way up from the bottom. And we're on 3435. And you talk about plastic surgery and breast augmentation, which indicates that there are a lot of people who are very dissatisfied with external things. They're, you know, they're not so concerned about their character, but it's, they have to look a certain way, which is very sad that somebody thinks that they have to have plastic surgery in order to
It is very sad because I remember reading studies on the suicide rates of people that have breast implants and plastic surgery. And it is, I forget the exact numbers, but it was extraordinarily higher. Because these people, of course, are not happy with themselves.
Sure.
And they think that, you know, bigger boobs or you know, tighter face or eye, or whatever.
Right.
You know, it's 15 million of these procedures are going on every year.
Wow.
In the United States. We're number one.
And you bring up Joan Rivers as an example.
It's amazing. I brought her up and she died right after I published this.
Yeah.
And died right after she said that thing about Michael, huh?
Right.
And she died very interestingly with a procedure that there's no way you die, and brought in a doctor that, you know, it was something very shady.
Right.
I remember it was like I didn't look into past a certain point, but I was like, my, wait a second, she just said something that's totally taboo.
Right.
and well, since she's dead in an operation, I shouldn't be ever die. And a doctor that was, I don't know, unaccredited or something, wasn't supposed to be there. It was there, and then he wasn't there, and I was like, what?
Right.
It's, anyway, so, and you know, she was. I never liked her.
And I never did just, either.
I just thought she, you know, I said this before to you. When I grew up in Elmhurst, Queens, New York, which was the most ethnically diverse neighborhood on earth. I got pretty much along with everyone. But as soon as I started meeting Jewish guys, men, I just went, what's the matter with that guy? The first one, you know, what's the matter with him? Oh, it's just a one-off. And then the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And almost all of them had this attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't so much in the women, but she, it is in the women, because they always back their men. And mm-hmm. But, you know, but whatever. But Joan Rivers had her and Sandra Bernhardt. And I just, all of a sudden, you start looking around, and that one silver, that young girl.
Silverman,
that,
yeah.
Yeah, oh, jeez. Yeah. She's a piece of work, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, these people, the way they get away with, you know,
Sarah Silverman.
Sarah, yeah, thank you. Yeah, I remember seeing some of the videos. I was like, I wanted to reach in through my screen.
Yeah.
And it just, anyway, I mean, they show who they are, you know, to.
Right, they can't help it.
Yeah, I know. It's sort of, that's what happens when you get inbred too much. So it's, but number 33, we're number one in gun ownership, and out of anybody in the world, and that's a good thing. You know, that's why it's the Second Amendment, although we do have the same group of people trying to get the guns away from us. So,
right.
Deanna and Clint, thank you, Deanna. Bless you, Deanna.
Our program's over.
I thank you. And,
well,
and
thank
we got
you.
17 of them again from the back end.
Yes. Thank you.
Have
so
a good
much
night and have a good rest of the week. All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, listeners. Join us tomorrow night. I'll be here. Thank you so much. Night.